Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have White Sox talk, Cubs talk, Bears talk. We got it all. Good stuff, bad stuff, and somewhere in between. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. See, sure, the season isn't going on right now, but it'll be starting up before you know it. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how was Family Fest, my friend?
It was very, very fun. It was a little misty at first. When we got to Soldier Field, it was still misting. But by the time the practices began, the rain subsided, and it was actually very, very comfortable at Soldier Field because we were sitting in the north end zone. So usually the sun is beating down on you, you know, early midday, but it was still completely overcast, a pretty dark sky for, you know, it's your typical rain, dark sky, but it stopped misting when the practices started. It wasn't hot at all. Very, very comfortable. And I definitely felt like there was a bit more of a buzz this year than the previous several years. And I do think there were some more people in attendance. I think they opened up more of the seating this year in the end zones for Family Festival. But, you know, obviously you watch what's on the field and practice is practice. But the fact that we got to watch some fun things on the field, see some new faces, and, you know, maybe a little hope when you see a few plays being made, it was a lot of fun. And I feel like just sitting there among the fans, like, even though, you know, it's nowhere near every seat is sold, it's just a semi-small group of Bears fans, you just feel that fan base thirsting for something good. And I was among them. And you just hope that this is the start of something going in a positive direction.
I mean, that's the hope. You know, I'm optimistic, but I'm trying to temper my expectations a little bit because every year schedule comes out and I'm just like, clink, 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 17-0, clink, 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 clink.
You know, this is 1 year, and I don't know about you, but this is kind of how I feel. When people ask me, what do I think the Bears are going to do in terms of a win-loss record? My honest answer, I don't know. I have a real hard time putting a number on it because, look, you and I both went through the schedule and we did the win-loss game. We do it every year when the schedule first comes out. And this is before, you know, more moves are made. And, you know, the Bears did make some moves over this past weekend. But, you know, that's kind of our first initial look, you know, with the understanding that a lot's going to change during the season for both the Bears and the opponents they're playing. And as we all know, nothing is certain until you play the games. But even with kind of this general guessing and ideas we have about other teams and opponents and what we have right now, it's just one of those seasons where I'm like, listen, I could see this team only winning 5-6 games. But if you said, hey, guess what? They're going to end up winning 9. Would I be like, oh my gosh, no way? No. It's like you can see things going in either direction. I think we know what we want. I mean, obviously we want to win every game possible, but in terms of the team on the field, we know what we want to see. We know what we're hoping for. It's just going to be a matter of how's it going to happen? Is it going to happen? What are we going to see? Who's going to excel? Who's going to disappoint? Who's going to get injured? Who's going to stay healthy? Just so many questions on a team that's rebuilding. it really is kind of a mystery.
I mean, I think I speak for all Bears fans when I say the twofold dream is the Bears win the Super Bowl and the Panthers go 0-17.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that much to ask, you know?
Clearly
so
not.
So then we win the Super Bowl and we get the first pick overall. And
that would be the ultimate win.
Oh yeah. And then with this upcoming quarterback draft, man, we would be raking in more draft picks.
There would be like a second Chicago River, and that's just the salivation of Ryan Poles.
He'd be eating good.
Oh yeah. And I gotta give a lot of credit to Ryan Poles for the moves he made this past week, which you and I know we're going to talk about, because there was a time where we thought, are we going to hit a stalemate here? Are we not going to make the moves we wanted to? Everybody and their mother knows how much cap space the Bears have. So there was so much flexibility to get a deal done, and they were able to get some deals done. And I think that with those being made, there's a bit more of a confidence saying, hey, you know what? This regime is not playing around. I don't know how good this team is going to be, but you know, they're clearly trying to make moves that are not only smart, but I mean, there's a difference between smart and just improving, because you can make any sort of move whatsoever that may seem smart in the short term, but not the long term. Whereas you're making smart moves for where you are right now. You know, you're a team that's trying to build up. You know, we talked about, what was it, Jalen Carter? He went to the Eagles. The Eagles are the favorites in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl. They can make moves like that. The Bears, it's much more of a risk because you're trying to build something. It's understanding where you are as a team and where you're trying to build up to. And I think that Ryan Poles has an overall understanding. Do I think all the moves are perfect? No. Do I think there are other areas I have concerns in? Yes. But I feel like for the most part, there's at least an understanding of where this team is trying to get and where they are now.
Right. And, you know, the two moves that we're talking about, they brought in Mercedes Lewis, the veteran tight end, who was like a safety net for Aaron Rodgers with the Packers last year. I'm okay with this move because, you know, sure, he's 200 years old. I believe he came in the same draft as Jay Cutler and Devin Hester.
He was drafted 28th overall in 2006.
Yeah, I think that was the Jay Cutler and Devin Hester drafts.
He made his debut the year the Bears went to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman.
Yeah.
Think about that.
So, you know, other people in his class have been eligible for the Hall of Fame for multiple years now after playing a good career. So they brought him in. They're not expecting anything from him. He is basically the third tight end. So you've got Robert Tonyan, who is the pass catching tight end. You've got Mercedes Lewis, who is the inline blocking tight end. And you've got Cole Kmet, who is that hybrid tight end.
And you look at Mercedes Lewis as a leader more than anything, I think.
Yes. He's going to come in and be that consummate professional that comes in and helps everybody get better. And unlike Jimmy Graham, I think Mercedes Lewis can still do the things that you hope he can do, and for a lot cheaper than you were paying Jimmy Graham.
Well, and think about it. You were paying Jimmy Graham a lot of money to be your tight end one. And, you know, to Jimmy Graham's credit, he put up the numbers. Like, he was pretty productive here when he was in Chicago. But you were looking at a situation where the Bears had they had a big tight end room, but it was quantity way over quality at the time when they brought in Jimmy Graham. And you brought in Jimmy Graham, you jumped on him to pay him a lot of money. He was already aging near the end of his career, and he was supposed to be your number one guy. In this situation, you're looking at just depth. It's like you're looking at your David Ross third catcher in 2015 with Mercedes Lewis.
Yep.
And there's another big thing here, too. What did we say about Robert Tonyan? Where did he come from?
Green Bay.
And who did he play under?
What's his face?
Luke Getsy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, both know the system. Both know the Packers locker room and how that their plan of attack is to play against the Bears. It's and both guys, I think you have them for a combined under $4 million. So I'm totally okay with it. You know, Mercedes Lewis is a blocking tight end. And, you know, I don't think his blocking skills are going to go out the window.
No, and he's even if he just acts like that leader and, you know, barely plays, that's fine. I mean, you look at last year, he played in 17 games. He made 6 catches on 7 targets, 66 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, you know, he hasn't had over 300 yards since 2017. So you're not looking at a guy who's, you know, going to be racking up yards and touchdowns and whatnot. I mean, he was a Pro Bowler all the way back in 2010 with Jacksonville. And, you know, this is just a situation where you say there's no real downside to this because you're not paying him to be even your second tight end.
Yeah, he is in here for veteran leadership, and knows the system, and he's going to help this running game. And for all of the passing that we're excited about, this team is going to be very run oriented.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the running game that we have right now. You look at your running back situation. You hear what Ryan Poles says about beating you in the trenches. It's going to be a situation where you look at this and say, hey, listen, why do you think they were bringing back Equanimeous St. Brown on an extension? What is he really good at?
He's a blocking wide receiver.
Exactly. It kind of follows this mold here.
Also, when you have a inexperienced offensive line with new parts, is the way you get them in the groove is have them just go downhill and block on the run. It's a lot easier to gel and get things right in the run game than it is in the pass game. Because the way the pass rush is with blitzes and stunts and delays, it's, you know, there's a complicated blocking system. With the run game, you know, you get hat on hat. And sure, sometimes it gets a little more complicated than that with pulling and things. But for the most part, you just get a hat on a hat and a seam opens up. And, you know, you've got running room. So it's nice for the offensive linemen to get in that groove and establish themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other move the Bears made is one that we had been talking about for a while, is the Bears had to bring in a veteran pass rusher. And once the draft was over, I think everybody and their mother was saying, yeah, the Bears are going to do this. The Bears are going to do this. And it took, you know, all of May, all of June, all of July, into August before they actually did bring in an edge rusher, a veteran edge rusher. And they brought in Yannick Ngakoue. And Ryan Poles said, hey, it just took time for this deal to get done. And, you know, when you looked at it, these guys all have salaries that they want and preferred franchises that they want to go to. And in their perfect world, they would all get a multi-year deal at the money they wanted, guaranteed money, and go to a team that's contender. But it doesn't always work out that way. And I think Yannick had wanted a multi-year deal and to go to a franchise that was contending for a Super Bowl. And then he opened it up. Well, I'd rather just get paid. And he ended up with a one-year deal. And he got better money than I thought. Not by a ton. I figured he would be 8 to 9 range, and he got 10. So ballpark there. But the Bears waited it out. And, he worked with Rod Marinelli before. And Rod Marinelli apparently put in a good word and said that he would be a great fit for this system. And the Bears need pass rush help to help this young secondary. So, fingers crossed that it works out.
Yeah. And I think you look at the salary he's making. My policy is always, if it's a 1 year deal, I ain't worrying about it, especially when the Bears have so much cap space. I think that getting him on a 1 year deal makes this so much less of a risky move. And he's coming off a season of 9.5 sacks in 15 games. The previous year with the Raiders, 17 games, 10 sacks. And, this guy, he's putting up some pretty solid numbers here. Now, he's stronger at the passing game than he is the running game, but we just needed somebody to get to the quarterback desperately.
Last year, we really struggled against the run, and I think we did a solid job of shoring that up. Is Billings brought in as a run stopper, Walker more of a run stopper. You bring in whole new linebacking core. I think your run defense will be better, but you still lack pass rushing, because the Bears, for a team that had such a bad defense, I didn't worry about the pass as much.
No, I didn't either. Reason a lot of those passes late in season were completed is because the quarterback had all day to throw,
and at the end of the year we were just decimated with players. Kyler Gordon was out for a while, and Jalen Johnson was out for a while, and Eddie Jackson was out, and we were playing undrafted rookie cornerbacks. So I think, watching these guys play in practice, I'm excited how these young corners are playing. I mean, Jalen Johnson is playing for a new contract. And Tyreek Stevenson, even when the guy is catching a pass, it is not because he was in a bad spot or didn't have good coverage. It was just a perfect throw and ball placement. And then they have the fifth round pick that they got at cornerback that is competing with Tyreek Stevenson for that other outside corner starting spot. So it's a competition, not because both guys are the second round pick is not playing well. It's because that fifth round pick is playing exceptional, and both guys are playing really, really good, that it's a competition. So, you like what's going on, and you're like, okay, let's give them some help.
I want to talk about the secondary a little bit, because I mentioned watching practice at Family Fest today. That secondary plays very, very hard. That is a scrappy, hard playing bunch. I mean, I know practice is practice, but watching them on one-on-ones, and just watching them play, they were playing really hard today. It was pretty impressive to see how they were staying on their man. I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, even those plays where you're like, oh, man, look at DJ Moore make this catch. Look at Chase Claypool make this catch for a touchdown. And it is really good defense. It's just an like impossible throw and catch to defend. And you're like, man, like it's so good that after you're done wowing over the throw and catch, you have to say, well, that was really good coverage too. And to make it more impressive for the offense.
And they make plays on the ball. Again, yeah. I know it's just practice, but they're doing more than just covering their guy. They're making plays on the ball. Do you remember when we saw secondary struggles in recent years where we kept saying, you know, they were in a decent spot, but they didn't make a play on the ball. And this is where, as cliche as it sounds, I think that the hits principle comes in.
You know, you can't build that culture in one season. They started establishing it last year and build it up through the year. And now they come in where the guys that were here last year know what to expect. And the new guys coming in see that and say, oh, this is how I'm supposed to play. That's how to build culture.
Exactly.
You know, they keep talking about, oh man, the Lions, they're building that culture, that their head coach, he's hard nosed. He bites kneecaps and he does squat thrusts with everyone out there.
He wanted actual Lions on the sideline. Isn't that awesome?
And you're like, but you know what is, or sure, they're playing hard nose, but the half that team got suspended for gambling. Like, clearly that culture is not what you want it yet.
Yeah. Dan Campbell's going to need to be like, guys, listen, you could bite kneecaps, but don't bet how much of that kneecap you're going to bite.
But I'm liking what this happening with this Bears. And I think part of it is Ryan Poles watched these practices early on and evaluated. You know, I have a feeling that if he thought this was going to be a garbage defense, what's the point of spending money and bringing in an edge rusher and, you know, and trying to compete rather than give younger guys the reps. But you're like, oh, hey, I see everything else sort of working out, and let's give them the best opportunity to win ball games. And I think that was part of it. He saw it. There's still a need. Nobody just magically stepped up. And he saw the rest of the defense gelling. You know, we haven't had Yannick come to practice yet. I think they said Tuesday is going to be his first day.
Yes, I believe so.
Cause I believe he was on vacation when this all came through. So he needed to go home and get some affairs together and then head to Chicago. So we'll see him this week, and get him acclimated to this team. And it shouldn't be too crazy for him to come in because he's played in Rod Marinelli's system before in Oakland.
It also helps too that he's a veteran. So, you know, he obviously playing with different teams, different schemes, but he knows the drills, he knows the intensity of camp. And it sounds like from everything he said that that he's really done a good job staying in shape and whatnot. So you hope that's obviously true, but you know, being a veteran, knowing what goes around every year, you feel good about that.
Yeah. And plus his job is see quarterback, eat quarterback.
Darn.
What I'm really hoping for is what I'm excited for is when Jervon Dexter, you know, starts figuring it out. Like, I like what I see, but when he finally figures it out and realizes that, you know, he's a big boy playing in his world, that he's just going to just smash through and collapse that pocket in the middle and not give anywhere to go. And if you watch Yannick's play, is sure he gets his 8 to 10 sacks every year, but a lot of times it's like Robert Quinn, where he gets that bend and gets around the corner and he swats at the ball. Now, if you can't step up in the pocket because the pocket is collapsing, guess what? Those are fumbles.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fingers crossed that we see Jervon Dexter take that leap and just start, you know, smashing the middle of that pocket.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's see. The one other thing with Yannick Ngakoue is I just read something from Flus, and he was saying that he honestly believes that Ngakoue is a three down player, which is not how we sort of view him as fans. We view him as a passing down kind of guy, where you're going to rotate him in. And that's not how they're viewing him at the coaching staff, or at least that's not what they're saying. So either they're feeling comfortable with him against the run, or they feel like they need the passing rush help so much that they're willing to deal with his deficiencies at the run game, or they really feel that with the right coaching that they can get him to where he needs to be as a run defender.
Yeah, I we'll see, I guess. I mean, if they see it and they can get it out of him, good for them. I don't know.
I think it's a little bit of smoke up our ass.
It probably is. I mean, that's kind of what I was leaning towards, but I don't know.
But I mean, you do have rotational depth at this point. And you know, you could bring him in and out and put him in and passing downs and you know, your running downs sort of back him out and put somebody in there that's a little bit better against the run. But you know, you've got enough guys where you can send him in waves and keep everybody fresh and in attack mode.
I'm more curious to see how that all unfolds, because again, there's a situation you have with a veteran guy. He's what, 27, 28. Are you really going to be able to change the mold like that for a guy who's been around?
No, not really.
I just have questions about that.
Let's see. What else do I have with the Bears? The one thing I've really liked is we saw early on with the practices that the offense was having their way with the defense. And it seems like this week, the defense went in and just decided, hey, you know what? We're coming and we're going to play hard and we're going to talk shit, because they've come with that energy this week.
They are bringing it.
And Eddie Jackson talking shit, Jaquan Brisker talking shit, Jalon Johnson saying that it's time for their nuts to drop. Like, these guys are, I don't know if Eddie Jackson was the leader of that, or who was the one that decided to say, hey, listen, we're going to play with big boy energy. And they are bringing it, and they really punched the offense in the mouth. And the one thing that they said is, hey, listen, Justin Fields is really good, but he's a quiet leader, and we want to make him that vocal. You know, you look at Tom Brady, and he's like kind of an extreme where he's screaming at his players and breaking shit. Maybe you don't want that, but you do want sometimes you want your quarterback to be a more vocal leader.
Brady also earned the right to do that.
I don't know if he earned the right to throw his tablet around, but you know, he didn't have expectations of these receivers. You know, you saw Aaron Rodgers, the same thing, and most veteran quarterbacks that are worth a worth their weight in gold, they've they always will yell at the receivers for being in the wrong spot because they know the offense better than anybody else.
Right. Like, I mean, is anybody going to question Tom Brady's judgment on the field?
No.
When he's, I mean, is anyone going to question, you know, if it was Peyton Manning or Drew Brees or somebody who is an all-time great? No. It is a little different when you have an inexperienced guy like Justin Fields, but yeah, I don't think Justin Fields is ever going to be that type of guy where he's throwing things and yelling, but you know, maybe it is a little bit of a wake up call. Like, listen, like, hey, you know, to be great, you gotta, you know, play with a little more intensity. You gotta be a little more hard. You know, it's cliche, but there is a truth to it.
Yeah. I think they want him to go out there and not just lead by example and know the offense and be in command. They want him to go out there and they want him to beat the shit out of the defense and put them on their heels and, you know, really, really come with that fire, not just the skill and the expertise and the system, but that fire and passion too. You know, I always look at Hines Ward. Hines Ward was a good receiver, but where he excelled was anytime he needed to make a block, Hines Ward was coming for your head. And he would just lay people out and better have your head on a swivel because he's coming for you. And I love that. I love that passion. And you're like, man, he's an offensive guy with a defensive mentality. And I think with this Bears offense, I think they're skilled enough. And you've got to set that tone, especially with that offensive line. I think Tevin Jenkins he's got dog in him. And
dog. It was good seeing him play today. It really was.
Yeah. Tevin Jenkins, dog. Justin Fields, dog. And I think, you know, I think there's some guys on that offensive line that, you know, got that dog in them. We've got to get it out of Braxton Jones. I think he's talented, but got to get that nastiness out of him. Darnell Wright, the new draft pick, he's got a nasty streak in him. He seems like a nice guy, friendly, but on that field, he will bite your kneecaps. I want to see that come out more. But yeah, so it's nice to see that defense bringing that intensity, because you had Eddie Jackson and Chase Claypool going at it. You had Velus Jones get into it. You had Jaquan Brisker running down the sidelines, chirping at the offense on the sideline. I love it. It's, you know,
flapping his wings like a bird. Chirp, chirp, chirp.
You know, it's, there's that fine line of competitive fire. And sure, you're seeing it bubble over a little bit, but not in a bad way where you're like, oh man, this is some bad news bear shit.
That's not a way to bring your teammates down. That's a way to elevate everybody's game. And that's a way to show that, listen, I'm putting my 100%. You need to put your 100%.
But yeah, I mean, watching, you know, I haven't been to any of the practices myself, just seeing clips and reading reports. It's starting to see where, you know, we saw right away the DJ Moore connection with Justin Fields. And now you're starting to see the Chase Claypool connection and you're seeing his worth.
Yeah. And, you know, DJ Moore today made a really nice catch in the end zone. It was a tight window. He had defenders in front of him, but he was able to make the catch in the back of the end zone. And you saw Justin Fields targeting Chase Claypool quite a bit. And you can tell they're trying to work on building a chemistry there.
Mm-hmm. Though what you're not hearing a lot of is Darnell Mooney.
No, you're really not. You're really, really not.
And, you know, I'm starting to wonder, is he kind of falling by the wayside a little bit? And Valus Jones has been picking it up, and you're hearing good things about he had some drops early on, but you're seeing him understand the offense and running routes better. And since those early drops, he's been working with the jugs machine to make sure he's catching everything, and he's fielding punts and
looked good fielding punts today.
Yeah.
Didn't muff anything.
And you got Tyler Scott, who is, I think, was the drafted replacement for Darnell Mooney, is looking good for a rookie. Darnell Mooney is going to have to pick it up if he wants to earn that contract.
Yeah, that is going to be something to watch, because there have been a lot of people impressed by Scott so far this camp.
Yeah, when they drafted him, I was like, ooh, like that. This means that Chase Claypool is the guy that they're more likely to sign an extension to than Mooney.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that the Bears are really hellbent on making Chase Claypool a productive player for them.
I mean, multiple fold reasons. One is he's size speed combo guy. It's tough to match. He's big and tall and fast. And he's a talented receiver. And I think that they really want to optimize that mismatch that he's going to have against a lot of cornerbacks. Also is Ryan Poles doesn't want to lose. And he has had to eat a lot of shit from people talking about the trade.
Do you give up the first pick in the second round for Chase Claypool? And you could have drafted this player or that player. And, you know, not realizing that when you made that trade,
there was no way in hell you were going to wind up with the number one overall pick. And then you just went into a free fall at the end of the year. So, yeah, I mean, you weren't happy that it ended up being the first pick of the second round. And actually, with Miami's forfeiting of their first round draft pick, it ended up being the 32nd pick overall. Like, sure, that sucks to give up. But, the day is, you brought in last year's receiving core, especially after Mooney went down, was dog shit tacos. And this year, you have Darnell Mooney is back, and he's your third option, maybe even lower. And you've got two studs in there that are just running shit, and you didn't have them last year. So,
no, you didn't.
They were not available in free agency. They were available via trade.
And listen, it's probably in Chase Claypool's best interest too to be productive this year so he can get paid by the Bears.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, we were sitting pretty high up. Usually I sit by the tunnel where they come out, so I'm a lot closer, but I was up a lot higher this year. But even up there, you look down and you see how tall Chase Claypool, you see how big Chase Claypool is.
He's a big
and it's
dude.
Like, wow, he is a big dude. And you know, it's having size. You have that size because that's not really something that you look at Darnell Mooney having or DJ Moore really having.
Yeah.
It's good to have a balance.
Big target with a big catch radius.
And that's another reason too, even though he's not really, you don't want him to be a big target in a crucial time, but you know, we talked about Equanimee St. Brown and his value as a blocker. He's also a guy with size too. So I think that the Bears are really trying to find a nice balance there. And if Chase Claypool is productive, then it's like, look, you have your number one in DJ Moore. you also have Chase Claypool being productive, and he's got the size. So you could play some mismatches there. It's just Chase Claypool is going to be incredibly important. He doesn't necessarily have to put up 1,000-plus yards on the year and be top 10 in receiving touchdowns. You just need him to be consistently productive.
Right. I just saw another note I've written to myself. Is thinking back to last year's defense, that was just piss poor. Like people, oh, you know, the defense not just going to come top 10 defense overnight, blah, blah, blah. If you consider players that were coming back and missed a majority of the season and they're coming back from injury, along with the brand new players that weren't here last year, you have Jalen Johnson and Eddie Jackson are two players coming that you've lost for most of the year last year coming back. Both your starting linebackers are brand new. So it's essentially four different players. DeMarcus Walker, Yannick Ngakoue, new players. Tyreek Stevenson, new player. Billings, new players. So, like, you have Kyler Gordon, who I would say between trying to figure things out and injuries, missed half the season last year. But you essentially have Kyler Gordon, Justin Jones, Jaquan Brisker coming back. And everybody else is essentially new or returning from injury. So you can't tell me this is not going to be a better defense. Is it going to be a good defense? I don't know. We'll see. But all the signs are pointing to it's going to be a significantly better defense than last year.
The nice thing is where you improved on the linebacking situation, you brought in two veteran proven guys. We know who Tremaine Edmonds is, and we know who TJ Edwards is. And you know where they came from. They came from two successful teams. Tremaine Edmonds came from the Bills, and TJ Edwards came from the Eagles. So they come from winning cultures, and they've proven their worth already. So you at least have a comfort knowing that the linebacking core that you built up is with guys that are proven, experienced veterans.
Right. Let's see, what else did I want to say? Justin Fields, I saw some people still shit-talking him that, oh, he can't figure it out. He's terrible, blah, blah, blah. Go look at Josh Allen's stats his first 2 years. And look at what's his name from the Eagles? And look at their stats from the first 2 years of their playing career.
A lot of people doubted Jalen Hurts.
Jalen Hurts was a I mean, if you remember, Josh Allen was labeled a bust. Mm-hmm. Jalen Hurts was labeled a bust. And then in their third year, they both got a wide receiver and started playing exceptionally well. And Justin Fields has been outside of Chicago, been labeled a bust. You got him a wide receiver and he's going into his third year. I think people are going to, you know, really be eating their words.
I hope so.
You know, and it's funny, they had some guy from The Athletic on the radio the other day where he did this tier ranking, like, you know, quarterback tiers. And Justin Fields was a tier four last year, and now he's tier three. And he's like, you know, I talked to, you know, GMs in the league, and they were like, well, you know, Justin Fields, I'm not confident he can throw. And, you know, I said, well, what about the numbers between Hurts and Allen going into their third year? And he's like, well, I just felt that they were better. And I was like, I think that's really just hindsight is 2020. You forgot how much you didn't like them and thought they were failures until they became successful. And then once they became successful, you just completely forgot about that and only remember the good times. And I think that's what's going to happen with Justin Fields. You're going to forget.
Yeah, I hope so.
The one concern I have so far with this team is, and luckily we have not seen a serious injury yet, but we've seen a lot of guys go out with injury, and this early in the season, it's got my hackles up a little bit. Roschon Johnson was out. He's back now. Justin Jones was out for a bit. He's back now. Tevin Jenkins was out for a bit. He's back now. DeMarcus Walker is out. Nate Davis, Tremaine Edmonds, Jack Sanborn, Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker, Lucas Patrick is the latest one. A lot of injuries that I hope they get out of their system now. They don't have to report on any of them yet, but Flus has said that none of them are serious or long-term. So I'm hoping so, but it is worrisome when you start to see that many injuries piling up.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen all across the NFL, we've seen some notable injuries around camps. I mean, look at what happened to Joe Burrow.
Yeah, Joe Burrow. I think that's, I'm starting to worry that's going to be worse than they initially said. I mean, it's not an ACL tear, but I still don't think it's good.
Well, it's natural to worry. I mean, this is arguably the second best player in the NFL.
Yeah. You know, when you already have Ja'Marr Chase publicly saying, just sit out the first 5 weeks, then come back. And, you know, I don't know if he's being nervous and precautious or if he knows something that we don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, I would like to see health come through because that's, you know, this is a team that's still working to build their depth. So, you know, the more starters they lose, the more hurdles they have to overcome to be a successful team.
Mm-hmm.
But we get to see them play in a week.
That's right. We take on the Titans at noon Saturday.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. I want to check out to I like to take my kid to see the last home preseason game of the year because you can usually get tickets for dirt cheap. And so if she doesn't want to stay the whole time, we can bounce. And, you know, the weather's a lot nicer in August than mm-hmm. it is in December and January. So, you know, take her. And so I gotta look into tickets.
Do they play two or one? Is it the only preseason game at home?
I thought they had two.
I don't really look ahead to preseason, so I just kind of see it as it comes up. So I just know they're playing at home next Saturday against the Titans.
Yeah, I thought they played two. Let's see. I think they played the Bill. Yeah, they played the Bills August 26th.
Okay. So it's going to be home, road, home.
Home, road, home, yeah.
Who do they play on the road this year?
The Colts. They have joint
practice. That's right.
Yeah, they have joint practice.
Well, that's pretty nice because you have two games in Chicago, and then the one place you go to on the road is just Indy.
Yeah. Yep. And so you have joint practice with them. It's close. And so you're not traveling at all, which is nice.
Yeah, that's good.
Is there any other Bear stuff you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, I've pretty much given my whole synopsis so far of what I think. And, you know, next week we'll probably have a lot more to talk about.
Absolutely. Should we talk? Do you want to talk Cubs or you want to talk Sox?
We can start with Sox.
So I really was coming on here to talk about Tim Anderson getting knocked out by Jose Ramirez. And I had a lot of thoughts about it. And then I saw a lot of people being racist and using it as a racist dog whistle against Tim Anderson. So I want to cool my jets on that. But did he get caught with a right?
That was quite a cut. I mean, that was a straight KO by Ramirez.
Yeah, he really got him. That was one of the better baseball fights I've seen. Those two guys are squared up.
Absolutely. I mean, that looked like the hockey guys dropping their gloves, and it kind of reminded me of the punch with Odor and Bautista back in 2016. You remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
Because, you know, listen, sometimes, a lot of the times, really, when these types of brawls break out, it, you know, guys just kind of come together and pushing, shoving, and sure, there might be some attempted punches thrown, but it's really just a fray. This was put up your dukes.
Yeah, they really squared up, and they were having a boxing match.
And the freaking umpire just like, I didn't allow this.
And of course, Eloy gets injured during it.
Yeah, he comes hobbling out like freaking Mo of the Three Stooges, and you're just like, oh my god. I assumed he just got like stepped on, right?
I don't know. Did he play today?
That I don't know. I did not see the game. I was out at Bears Fest, obviously, so I didn't see it. But I don't think if it was serious, we would have known.
He played today.
So, yeah, yep. It clearly wasn't serious.
But, yeah, I mean, it was, that was, I mean, I was trying to figure out, because that turned ugly real quick.
Right, that, it just looked like a normal play.
Yeah, and it seems that there was some stuff boiling over, that this was the straw. But you know, Tim Anderson got the worst end of that one, and he's going to get big time suspended for that.
I feel like somebody, and I'd have to go back and look at slow motion, but clearly it started with the jawing back and forth, right?
Then the finger point.
Right.
Jose Ramirez finger pointed, and that's Tim was like, all right, throwing the glove down, we're fighting.
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminded me of too? Do you remember the Chris Young Derek Lee fight back in 2007?
Vaguely, yeah.
Chris Young hits Derek Lee. He's walking to first base. Chris Young goes up to him. It looks like Derek Lee's just walking. Then Chris Young says something, and you kind of see Derek Lee mouth the word what, and then next thing you know, the fisticuffs come out. So clearly something was said, and then it just escalated just with the snap of a finger.
I remember many moons ago, Mark Grace got hit. It was against the Cardinals, and he charged the pitcher, and Pedro Guerrero beat him to the pitcher's mound and grabbed Mark Grace by the shoulder and ripped his shoulder out of the socket, and he had a separated shoulder and was out for a long time. And I'll still never forgive Pedro Guerrero for that.
Oof. Well, do you remember too that the other day recently, that was the 30th anniversary of the Robin Ventura Nolan Ryan thing.
That was really 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Jeez. I remember
year before I was born.
I clipped that out of the newspaper, and I had that hanging. I had a cork board hanging on my bedroom wall, and I like pin things I cut out of the newspaper. And I remember I cut that out, and it was in the Sun or in the Sun Times. They had, you know, Nolan Ryan had him in a headlock and punching him, and they put that picture right in the newspaper. I cut it out, and I put that right up on the corkboard.
Well, and I think what got a lot of people was that was so uncharacteristic of Robin, because Robin Ventura kind of reminds me of Kyle Hendricks, where like no matter the situation, it's just the heart rate is at calm, just cool as a cucumber. Like, you wouldn't expect that type of guy to charge the mound. Not only that, but charge the mound of one of the biggest, roughest, toughest arms that ever lived.
Did you ever see the Nolan Ryan documentary that came out like last year?
No, I need to.
I think it's streaming on maybe Amazon. You check it out. It's really good. But they made a point that, like, we tried to get Robin Ventura to come and talk and he wouldn't. But, you know, it, the whole fight thing, if this would have happened, you know, a month or two ago, you'd be like, okay, the hope here is this lights a fire under the asses of the White Sox. And and it's way too late, man. They're 13 and a half games back in the division. They're 18 games out of the wild card.
Yeah, it's, you think about this kind of thing, if it happens in June, early July, I think the conversations right now are a little bit different. Even if Tim Anderson was the one that quote unquote lost the fight, you think about, okay, emotions are high. There's some woken up guys on that team. You talk about it a little differently.
I take that back. The White Sox are 14 games out of first place in their division and 18 out of the wild card. And not only 18 out of the wild card, they would have to leapfrog 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams.
Yeah.
Like, they are so far out of it, and they are 23 games under 500. Their winning percentage starts with a 3.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I referenced that Derek Lee Chris Young fight that happened in 07 when they got hot in the second half. You know, it's like you think about those kind of things, and it may sound cliche, but if you're in one of those situations, that can be a rally starter. But, you know, the Sox already sold off some pieces, so
you sold off, and it's your, you know, what, 2/3 done with the season? It's a, you know, it's a day late and a dollar short here.
You may be able to play some better baseball, you know, a bit more focused, maybe a bit more energized, but you're not really talking postseason scenarios right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not. I mean, they're not mathematically eliminated, but boy, are they inching closer to that 0% chance of making the playoff territory. I mean,
they're only not mathematically eliminated because they play in the AL Central.
Yes. Let's see. There's only 3 teams worse in baseball, and that's only because they won today. But Kansas City and Oakland are the only, and 2 teams with a definite worse record. Colorado is, you know, right there with them, but they're a bad team. And, you know, you just traded away Middleton to the Yankees, Berger to the Marlins, Lynn and Kelly to the Dodgers, Graveman to the Astros, Giolito and Lopez to the Angels.
Gio not doing so hot.
Yeah, and you just lost Liam Hendricks to Tommy John surgery.
Just heartbreaking. It's like, how much more does this guy have to go through?
Oh, I know. I mean, I almost feel like it's the universe's way of saying, you know what? You don't deserve having to deal with playing for the White Sox with this, how bad they are the rest of the season.
So my question is there's the team option next year, right, for him?
Yes.
Do you decline the option, re-sign him, and then you kind of give him the option to do what he wants, because like declining the option, you don't, it would kind of make you look like a dick, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you pick up the option, you pick up the option, you're just paying him essentially. You can't trade him because he's not going to come back until probably right around the trade deadline of next year.
And right. So like, cause I hate to say it, but I don't think we're seeing Liam Hendricks pitch in a White Sox uniform again.
And you've got Tim Anderson, and assuming they don't pick up the, option for Hendricks, and depending on what they do with Tim Anderson, if they pick up that option, there's a good chance that Lurie Garcia is still one of your highest paid players next year.
Yeah, he's still making money, isn't he, from that team?
That's a combination of he's still making money and you don't have a ton of high cost players. Traded everybody away.
Right, right. I just wonder what's going to happen with Hendricks, because he's going to try to play again, as he should. I assume he's going to try to play again. I mean, the guy is such a workhorse and he's very determined and very tough and strong, so he's going to try to do it. It's just, I don't know what's going to happen from the front office standpoint, because again, if from a baseball perspective, going in another direction makes sense, but you also don't want to be the one that doesn't exercise the option to Liam Hendricks after what he's been through, right? You know, you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I still think they're not going to pick it up.
Could very well be.
I mean, what is the long-term outlook for this White Sox team? You know, I read varying reports of their hauls for all these players that they traded. Some people thought they did great. Some people thought it was mid. I don't know enough about the prospects they brought back. And, you know, it's hard to judge a trade based on prospects because you don't know what they're going to pan out like.
Right. I mean, there's so much to this whole thing. We have no idea.
So it's who knows how it's going to turn out. But this White Sox team, they're going to trade Dylan Cease at some point, because they're not going to pay him.
No, he's probably on his last deal. I mean, unless they're contenders again and they're going to play out the control that they have on him.
How do they compete next year?
I mean, if you're going to compete next year, it's you got to fill out your rotation. And that's a combination of making free agent moves and hoping that some of those pitching prospects you picked up worked out. Now, some of those guys they got are a bit higher up, so it's not like their potential path to the big leagues is crazy long. So I think they're hoping that some of these prospects they got in return are short-term solutions. But again, that's you're banking a lot on a lot of uncertainty there, because with what it feels like, unless things change in the offseason, from what it feels like, it looks like they're trying to retool around the current core. And when I mean current core, I am talking Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez. You're going to have Yoan Moncada no matter what at this point. Tim Anderson, I don't know. But I mean, right now, it seems like the White Sox are very, very inclined to hang on to Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert. And Luis Robert makes perfect sense. I mean, he's really, really good.
I mean, Eloy was on the trading block. So was Yoan Moncada. Just nobody was going to pick them up. I mean, Yoan Moncada is going to make $24 million next year.
You know, Eloy was on the trading block, but was he really on the trading block? I mean, was this a situation where you say, listen, we're going to do our due diligence, see what people are giving us, but we're going to make a pretty high asking price in order to trade him?
That's a possibility, but they essentially, the reports coming out were everybody was on the trading block except for Luis Robert.
Right. And I get that. I just always question what that really means. Like, here's the thing. Most GMs in that situation, with what you have, you're going to do your due diligence, right?
Right.
You might not have intentions of trading somebody, but you're never not going to take a call. You're not going to ever not evaluate or not evaluate the market. Luis Robert's one of those outliers where you're like, listen, unless it's Shohei Ohtani, we're not giving him up. But with other players, I think that they kind of prioritize where they want to keep and what they'd ideally like and say, listen, we're going to do our due diligence, but we're going to ask for much higher prices for certain guys because we're not as easy to get rid of them. Lucas Giolito, they were going to shop him as hard as possible because they knew he wasn't coming back. Like, I don't think their outlook of trading Lucas Giolito was nearly the same as potentially trading Eloy Jimenez.
I'm looking at the payroll right now for next year. Lance Lynn is gone. Liam Hendricks likely going to be gone. Tim Anderson possibly gone?
Maybe.
If that Maybe. Is the case, and I'm assuming Clevinger gone?
That's
a mutual option.
As much as he sucks as a guy, like, he has been pitching pretty well. Now, obviously, it's a mutual option, so the White Sox don't have full control here, but would you be surprised if the White Sox were inclined on trying to bring him back?
I mean, they need to bring somebody in that rotation.
Right.
But let's say, hypothetically, in a realistic hypothetical, Clevinger opts out. He's like, the controversy's kind of cooled down, and he thinks pitched well enough to get a multi-year deal. Maybe he opts out of that. It's a good chance of that.
I just don't know. Yeah.
If that's the case, Lurie Garcia will be the fifth highest paid White Sox player.
Yeah, I mean, there's 2 months left with Clevinger, so we'll see how it all finishes. But yeah, there's a lot of questions right now.
Yeah, I mean, what's your starting rotation next year? It's Cease, Kopech,
Pookie Toussaint, Chris Martin. I'm just throwing names out there.
I don't know.
I think they're going to rely on some of those prospects they got back.
Yeah. And your outfield. I mean, I don't know how you compete next year. I really don't. I mean, if you're the Yankees or the Dodgers or the Red Sox and you were in this predicament, yeah, because you'll go and spend. The White Sox won't.
Right. I mean, you're going to try to bank on prospects. And once again, it feels like you're going to try to bank on the division sucking.
I mean,
I still think that the minds in that building look at the AL Central and are like, yeah, well, this is going to leave things open for us. Listen, the division is a shit show. but you can't just throw your uniforms on the field and assume you're going to win a bad division.
Their estimated payroll is $74 million.
That ain't a lot.
And one-third of that is Yoan Moncada.
Wow.
That's not a lot. I mean, to get to the competitive balance tax, you could spend $162.9 million.
Mm-hmm.
But the White Sox won't. They won't sign high-cost guys or guys to long, big contracts. They just don't. So I don't know how they get better. That I don't, even with these trades, their farm system is not good enough to replenish, to make this a competitive team. And that's where I come with the, you know, they're probably going to trade Cease, because if they trade him, I think it's going to depend. If he finishes the season lights out, they might trade him in the offseason. If not, they'll probably wait until the next trade deadline where they can still get that bump in compensation because it's multi-year control. But I think that's what they're going to be banking on, is getting a haul for him and trying to build. But they've not done a great job of maintaining this farm system. And I think, you know, I know it's hard, but you sort of have to have waves of these players. So even when you bring people up, you've still got a farm system there. Is look at the Dodgers. They're on top of the world and they still have a great farm system. Seattle still has a good farm system and they're surging. The Cubs, they're surging. They still have a pretty decent farm system. The Orioles.
The Orioles.
Yeah. All are very good and have a good farm system still. That's the goal, you know, is if you just wipe out your farm system to get major league rosters, if those guys don't pan out, then, you know, you're stuck. We saw that a little bit with the Cubs. They brought up everybody and there was the cupboard was bare. And so they really had to, you know, strip it down to the studs to rebuild.
Yeah, I think that going into this offseason, there's going to be way more questions than answers, and we're going to get some of those answers in the offseason.
And I think, honestly, is just based on experience, a lot of those questions are just never going to get answered.
Like, hey, yeah, some won't.
Who's going to be our left fielder? Fuck if we know either. We'll figure it out game day.
Who's going to be our left fielder? That scene from The Office when Michael and Jim are talking, and every time that Michael has to say something important, he goes, So who's going to be your left fielder? Well, it's going to be what? Can't hear you. What about your second baseman? Well, for second base.
Oh, like when Michael was doing the negotiation tactics with Daryl?
Yes. Yes.
All right, let's move on to the Cubs. Better story. After we last talked, Jamer Candelario is now a Cub.
And in the what? He's played 6 games with the Cubs?
And his OPS is like 1.6.
He's hitting the shit out of the ball.
He really is. And not only that, is like everybody started to hit the ball. And, you know, I think the trade that they made to get him, I think is a good, that I think was like the perfect kind of trade.
Yep.
The Cubs got the player they wanted. They gave 2 quality players to Washington, but they were players that the Cubs were very likely going to lose in Rule 5 anyway.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, DJ Hurz has some upside, and Kevin Mate is just a complete lottery ticket at this point.
Yeah. I mean,
so
you know, they're both not nobodies. They're both, you know, guys that have upside. And, but you know, the likelihood that we were going to keep one or both of them, cause they were Rule 5 eligible, was pretty low. And for the Cubs, that makes a decision easier. You know, you don't have to worry about giving up somebody for nothing. And you get a player that's going to help you now. And it gives you the inside track if, you know, if you're thinking about re-signing him.
Right.
And he seemed excited to be back. Like, genuinely excited to be back.
I tweeted out, I said in a tweet with Doc Brown from Back to the Future, telling myself in 2016 that in 2023, Jamer Candelario would be a Cub and Chris Bryant wouldn't be.
It's true. But yeah, I mean, it's been great to have him back and, you know, playing first and third, for the Cubs and, you know, adding some pop to that lineup. And then they also, made a trade with the Royals to get Jose, Guas, for Nelson Velasquez,
who pitched great in Sunday's game.
Yeah.
Scoreless inning.
Yeah. And, you know, that was another trade that you got a guy that you thought you could fix. That was like a journeyman mid-level type reliever.
Wasn't he delivering like FedEx packages at one point?
I don't know. Possibly. But they thought they could fix him. And then they gave the Royals basically a lottery ticket. You know, Nelson Velasquez is a guy that, you know, at one point, I wouldn't say we were high on him, but we had fingers crossed with him. And he sort of blockaded at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we have 10 million outfielders.
Yeah, so we gave one to the Royals and we got a much needed relief pitcher.
Yeah, it's if the Cubs can get something out of Kwas, then heck yeah. I'm all for it. We need more arms. Our bullpen has been used quite a bit.
Yeah, it has. And you know, now we have Stroman going to the injured list and it doesn't sound like it's going to be for very long. And I'm hoping when he comes back, can you imagine if he comes back and he pitches like he did the beginning of the season?
Yeah, we're going to need that.
We're going to need that because honestly, the Cubs are playing great. I mean, they're in striking distance of first place in the division, and they're tied for the wild card right now with Cincinnati.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to talk about all the good things, but I think if we're going to get the bad out of the way, the starting pitching has not been great. To be fair, it's had some pretty damn tough assignments. The Braves are that's a video game.
That lineup. Yeah, that offense is just a juggernaut. And you know, and kudos to the Cubs. Like, you know, when we talked last week, we were like, goal for this week is to split with Cincinnati and not get swept by Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so we were trying to set realistic expectations because that Atlanta team is really good and the Cubs played great. That offense is relentless.
Yeah. I mean, they put traffic on every single inning possible and look at their entire lineup top to bottom. There are no breaks, none in that lineup. When you have Orlando Arcia, who is an all-star, who is at the bottom of your order, that's crazy. And Ozzie Albies is really good. Murphy is good. Darnold is pretty good. Austin Riley's good. But the two guys, first of all, Matt Olson, he's got almost 100 RB. Do you see how that guy hits the ball?
Yep.
Do you see that that home run he hit today? Like, that ball was vaporized.
And then Acuna, who is, there's a good shot that he is a 40-40 guy this year.
If you don't have Shohei Ohtani, I think he's the best player in baseball.
Yeah.
He hits everything.
So yeah, I mean, the Cubs starting pitching had a really tough assignment this week because Cincinnati can put some runs up and Atlanta can put some runs up. So,
and Cincinnati did put some runs up.
Yeah, they did.
We just put a hell lot more up.
Yeah, we were dropping touchdowns on them.
Yeah, we were. I mean, it literally looked like Bears Bengals out there. And, you know, I just want to say this about Cincinnati too. You know how everyone talks about Ellie De La Cruz?
Mm-hmm.
The guy that scares me on that Reds team is that Matt McClain kid. He hits everything.
Yeah, that team is good. I think I said it before this Washington series that they're in, but I was like, when I saw what they did against the Cubs, like they were scoring runs, but I think they're fading. Like I don't think they're going to just sink to the bottom, but I think we saw them make their run. And, you know,
if you jinx it, I am going to spit all over your piece pizza.
I think it's, if you ever seen a Fast and Furious movie, they use their Nas tank too early. and I think the Brewers, I don't think they've got the horses to win. I mean, you know, just imagine if the Cubs did shit the bed a couple of times for stretches this season, where they would be, because they were dead in the water like a month ago.
If you didn't have to figure out your bullpen, you'd be in first place. If you didn't waste time putting Eric Hosmer in the middle of your lineup, you'd be in first place.
If they would have signed Andrew Chafin in the offseason like I was screaming for.
And now he's on the Brewers.
I know. He should be on the Cubs.
Yeah, good old Andrew Chafin. Here's something I'm going to give credit to the Cubs, is that, not literally, but it's like they listened to us, that no more were they messing around with some of the 4A washed up veterans. I really like Trey Mancini, but it's pretty clear that the tank is empty. And they finally said, okay, that's enough.
Yeah, you saw enough of him, and your record when he played was bad. It was time to let him go. You saw Seiya Suzuki not been playing well, and he's losing playing time.
We have to have a serious talk about that.
You know, you need to play guys that are going to win you ball games. You know, Mancini got enough of Miles Mastroboni. Is play the guys that are playing good baseball.
Mike Tauchman. How big has that guy been?
He's been awesome.
The Palatine Pounder. Defensively and offensively. He obviously had the home run robbery in St. Louis. He's stinging the ball to all fields. And then today, he hit like three or four balls with like an exit velocity over 100. And then he throws out Acuna at the plate in what could have been a huge turning moment for the worse for the Cubs. Yep. And he threw him out at the plate. I mean, he's been incredible. And Seiya Suzuki has been pretty damn disappointing. And you were hoping that things would kind of work itself out. But I think the Cubs are like, you know what? We're going to treat this more like a platoon. And you know what? If platooning is going to get the best out of Seiya and the team, so be it. So yep. be it.
Yep. He's not going to automatically just get, the at-bats, depending on the righty lefty matchup. They're going to look and see who gives them the best shot to win every day. And if it's not him, then he's not going to be playing.
Yeah. And I feel like what really hurts with Seiya is that when he's in a slump, you just see the body language does not look good. And you know right then and there, it's like, okay, if the body language isn't good, the results are probably not going to be good.
Right.
I mean, Talkman's been an MVP, but the true MVP of the Cubs is Cody Bellinger, right?
I mean, I remember early on in the season, Mully from Mully and Haw was like, oh, the Cubs are a loser organization. They bring in Bellinger and they overpay him and he's washed up. And then you have Jason Hayward and he's going to go to the Dodgers and they're going to fix his swing. And he's going to be the guy that we saw in St. Louis. And that's why the Cubs can't win. And Bellinger's been pretty darn good.
And I doubted Cody Bellinger. I'll just say it. I doubted him and he's unreal. He's unreal. He's hitting the ball to all fields and he's hitting for some power too. I mean, he's hitting the ball when it means most, the clutch hits that he's collected.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen his OPS has got to be 950, 930.
It's above 900. I can tell you that.
Let's see. 925.
There you go.
He's been really, really good. Not just offensively, not just defensively, but as a teammate. Like he has been everything you wanted from him plus some.
Yeah, that is the truth. And I feel like too that with him in the lineup, it helps make the guys around him better too. You're seeing power from Dansby Swanson. Like he's hitting doubles and home runs. And you know that like the middle of the lineup isn't just some joke anymore. It's like, listen, if you're going to get production from Cody Bellinger and Dansby Swanson, things are going to look pretty good. And Ian Happ is starting to swing for some pop too again, which is really, really good.
Ian Happ yesterday just missed two home runs.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, they were two warning track shots. So, yeah. And is David Ross is finally starting to figure things out, I think.
You know what else is very interesting, too, is you notice who hasn't been playing either, especially with Stroman out?
Who?
Tucker Barnhart.
That's good, because he sucks.
I just, like, what's the point at this point? I get it, we've, you know, had the third defensive catcher, sure. And, you know, defensively, Tucker Barnhart's been fine this year. He's been fine. But I just, right now, what's the point?
Especially with Amaya.
Yeah, if you didn't have Amaya, it would be a completely different situation, but we do. Yeah,
Amaya makes him a double redundancy.
Right. And you got it with David Ross and John Lester. It made sense, and it worked. It just, in this scenario, what, he's basically Marcus Stroman's catcher now? I don't know. Yan Gomes has been better than what we've expected. Like, yes. He's legitimately an offensive threat.
Yeah. Yep.
You got to give him that. I don't know, but whatever.
This team is playing really well, and you need it because you've had some struggles there with the starting pitching. Kyle Hendricks got owned his last start.
Yeah, the first time through, he was spectacular, and then he gives up 7 runs. And you can kind of tell that with Kyle Hendricks, the Braves were patient, and Kyle Hendricks was aggressive. So they were working from behind in each at-bat, and then the Braves are like, oh, we should just swing earlier in the count, and lo and behold, the floodgates opened. And this, we're seeing, I wrote about it for Cubby Script the other day, The downside of this stretch for the Cubs is that the starting pitching as a whole has not been very good. Because Kyle Hendricks got lit up. Drew Smyly has not been very good. Marcus Stroman's been really bad and hurt. Justin Steele's been, his last 2 starts have been okay.
I mean,
tough assignments.
Yeah, he had tough assignments today, but he came out today just striking people out. As he got further along in the, number of times that guys were seeing him,
he got tired
and they were figuring him out a little bit. Yesterday you had the bullpen start.
And that was impressive.
I mean, Assad pitched well the time he was in there. I was expecting him to get blown up.
Yeah. I mean, he was just able to kind of hold his own. He bent, but he didn't break.
Yeah. I mean, I was expecting him to just get lit up. So the fact that he held his own, I was like, okay.
And then you look at what the bullpen does. They come in and they just shut it down.
Yeah.
In crappy weather.
But I will say, Tyone has been a lot better.
He's been your best guy. Over this past week, he's been your best guy.
You need it. Because, if the Cubs make the postseason, you're going to need Stroman to look like Stroman of the first half of the season.
Yep.
And you're going to need Tyone to look like the guy from the second half of the season. And you need Justin Steele to be Justin Steele.
Absolutely. Because,
and that's the only way you have any farts chance in a windstorm, because that's otherwise at this point, you're not throwing Kyle Hendricks out there in a postseason if you don't have to.
Really trust Drew Smyly in a start.
I don't trust Drew Smyly.
I'd rather use him in relief than a starter in a postseason setting. Because is that what Atlanta did with him? They used him as like a reliever.
Maybe. You just brought up Caleb Killian, I believe.
You did.
Oh, I saw that today.
Yes, for Anthony K. Anthony K. went back to Iowa.
So we'll see what happens there. But you got to get that stabilized.
Is Wesneski going to be part of this equation? That's a question.
Possibly. Possibly.
I that was one thing too that I think a lot of fans were irked about. Is you remember how much he pitched in that blowout on Friday? Just meaningless mop-up time. It's not necessarily what you always want, but I get it. Somebody's got to do it. Honestly, this is where I miss Michael Rucker. That was his job. Just, right. Oh, we're getting blown out. Just time to eat some innings.
Let's see. I'm looking at the probables here for the Mets series. Smiley, Tyone, and Hendricks.
Well, you hope Tyone can pitch decently again.
And I mean, he's going up against Carlos Carrasco, who's 3-6 with a 6.6 ERA. So that means the Cubs aren't going to score any runs.
Exactly.
I'm going to call that one right now. He's going to go six shutout innings.
Yeah. Well, didn't he beat us last time earlier this year at home.
I know. I was like, what the hell? So we get Senga, Carrasco, and David Peterson.
Yeah, no more Scherzer or Verlander there.
David Peterson, 5.65 ERA. Carrasco, 6.6. Senga is 7-6 with a 3.25 ERA.
Senga's good.
But he's win-loss, not great, but he's got 136 strikeouts.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
You mean David Peterson?
David
Peterson. Pardon my French, but you're an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, is Cubs, we were hoping for of their seven games this past week since we talked. We were hoping they would win. They would go 3-4, and they ended up going 5-2.
5-2, yeah. And you know, it's like the first loss to the Reds was pretty frustrating because you dug yourself a big hole, but you almost came back, and you had opportunities to tie, take the lead. You couldn't do it, so that was kind of frustrating. But you won the next three. And then the other loss to Atlanta, you got your ass kicked 8-0. So
yeah, that you were not in that one. That was,
and even if you didn't give up as many runs, they had Max Fried coming back, and he was just
there was no
untouchable.
But you know, when you're looking at the Cubs' schedule here, is you've got this series against the Mets, which is completely winnable.
You weren't thinking this at the beginning of the season, but this is kind of a must win.
It's so you've got. So right now you've got these next six games are the ones you've just got to hold your own here against. Because you're going 3 in New York, and then you go to Toronto for 3.
That's going to be tough.
But after that, you get 2 against the White Sox, 3 against the Royals, 3 against the Tigers, 4 against the Pirates. And that's a stretch where you should be able to really make up some ground. And then after that, you get 7 straight games against Milwaukee and Cincinnati. And at that point, you know, if you can beat up on the White Sox, the Royals, and Detroit and hold your own against Toronto and the Mets, you should be right up there with the division. And, you know, so the rest, let's see, we're looking at the rest of the schedule for the rest of the year. Cause we're coming up on the end of the year.
Yeah, we are.
You get those 7 against Milwaukee and Cincinnati. You get San Francisco for 3, Arizona for 4, who's playing real good baseball. Then you get 3 in Colorado against that terrible Colorado team. 3 more against Arizona, 3 against Pittsburgh, which is bad. 3 against Colorado, who's bad. And then you wrap up the season, 3 in Atlanta, 3 in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, I mean, honestly, that's not, that is not a terrible schedule to end.
Yeah, just the big ones are going to be the division games, because that can flip the script pretty quick, good or bad.
I mean, the good part is we don't have any more games against the Cardinals. And I know we we kicked their ass the last series, but that team has that stupid voodoo magic. And if it's the division title is on the line and you've got to beat the Brewers or Cincinnati or the Cardinals, are you choosing willingly the Cardinals in a must win series? I don't think so. I mean, if you're an outsider, if you're like a better, oh yeah, absolutely. But if you're a Cubs fan, it's like saying, all right, maybe the Packers are going to be terrible this year, but do you want to have to beat the Packers to make the playoffs if you're the Bears? Or would you rather play the Lions, even though the Lions are better?
It's Milwaukee that worries me. Milwaukee's had that magic since 2018.
Maybe.
They shouldn't be as good as they are, but they always end up being better than they are. It just doesn't seem to matter.
We'll see what they have left. I mean, you know, the Cubs are game and a half out of first place. They are right there.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we're here feels good. I didn't think a month or so ago we'd be in this position right now.
No, not at all. I thought, I was like, even at the trade deadline, I was like, it's stupid that they're not trading Stroman. And I didn't want them to trade Bellinger, but I was like, they should just trade Stroman. Don't be big time sellers, but just prepare yourself for next year, because this season's kind of lost. And they've felt differently, and they were right. I was wrong.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, they're a game and a half out of first place, and they are tied for the last wild card spot.
It's going to be quite a roller coaster over these next 2 months, that's for sure.
And we're only a couple games behind, you know, for that first wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
And Philly playing good baseball, but I think they've got a bunch of games left for this against the Braves, if I remember correctly. And that'll be toughens. They've got Twins and Toronto and San Francisco, and the Brewers. Nope, I guess I was wrong. They don't have any more games against Atlanta. Oh, that sucks. What about San Francisco? Who do they got left on their schedule? They got Texas and Tampa and Atlanta and Philadelphia and Atlanta again and Cincinnati and San Diego. So San Francisco's kind of got, they've got this one series against the Angels, who are stinking it up. And then after that, they do not have a single easy series the rest of the season.
Yeah.
That's good for us. What does the red schedule look like the rest of the season? I like that we can look at the rest of this. Oh, wait, hold on. Why does MLB schedule look stupid like this? I take that back. They weren't showing the whole schedule. So the Phillies have 7 more games against the Braves. So they do. Yeah, but you know, the teams were chasing. They don't have necessarily the easiest of schedules. I mean, the Brewers have the Dodgers, Texas, the Twins, the Padres, the Cubs, the Phillies, the Yankees, the Marlins. And the Cubs. So, you know, there's still a lot of baseball left, but I think the Cubs have a pretty good chance of making the postseason.
There's a chance.
I mean, I think it's pretty sizable.
I'm just going to go with the flow.
That's all I'm doing too. I'm not betting money on it. I'm not. Let's see. Right now, Cubs odds of making the postseason.
I think they're about 50-50 at this point, but it also depends on which projections models you're looking at, what betting algorithms, whatever it is, because there's different outlooks, different calculations, you know, with odds.
FanGraphs has them at 52.3%.
So there you go, 50-50.
And over a one-third chance to win the division. So it's a. What about the Giants? Huh. They think that the. It's looking like baseball thinks that the Giants and the Padres, I mean, the Phillies are going to make the wild card. Let's see. What other sites have it? And let's see. And the baseball reference has the Cubs with a 69% chance.
Hashtag nice.
Nice. Yeah. One other Cubs sort of related thing I just wanted to make note of is Cole Hamels retired.
Yeah, he did. Former Cub great.
Yeah, I mean, he had a nice run with the Cubs.
Yeah, I mean, remember how good he was when we got him in 2018?
The best part about it is when he left the Cubs, because of how good he pitched with the Cubs, he made a bunch of more money after that.
Yeah, he went to the Braves, didn't he?
Yeah, the Braves gave him a bunch of money, and I think he only ended up pitching like 4 innings for them.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, he had a great run, and honestly, he's got a shot at making the Hall of Fame.
I think so.
I absolutely think so. Yeah, I mean,
if you're going to have John Lester in conversations, you must have Cole Hamels in conversations.
I think Cole Hamels probably had a better regular season career. Boy, was John Lester good in postseason.
Yeah. Yeah. He was historically good in the playoffs.
Yeah. But Cole Hamels, I mean, enjoy.
Hey, he won a World Series too. He pitched in big games in the postseason too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not even denying that. I just think John Lester had a great postseason career.
Yeah.
It's not shitting on Cole Hamels' postseason career. It is just John Lester was.
Lester's career is highlighted by his postseason pitching.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, Cole Hamels, he's, you know, had a great career. He is, his postseason career is 7-6 with a 3.41 ERA, a 1.1 whip, 8.34 K per nine. So pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see his career stats here. His career stats: 59 WAR, 163 wins, a career 3.43 ERA, and 15-year career. His 162 game average is 13-10 with a 3.43 ERA.
Pretty good.
And strikeouts he got here, a 2,560 strikeouts. I mean, that's a solid career.
Yeah. More than solid.
Yeah. So good luck to him in his retirement. And, you know, I'm glad he tried to go for it one more time and, you know, give it everything you got and empty your clip and then call it a career and spend the $200 million you've earned playing baseball.
Yep, he made quite a living.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter/X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...